This episode of Vintage Stormfront Freaks has been previously recorded. Brought to you by the AMS Weather Band. Join a community of weather enthusiasts at amsweatherband.org. The Drive Weather App. Avoid dangerous weather on your road trip at driveweatherapp.com. And Midland Radios. Built for communication and made for connection at midlandusa.com. And Windstorm Products. For all your hurricane hardware needs, shop windstormproducts.com.
All right. Hey, we are really excited tonight. We have Stephanie Abrams on. This is our first time on the show. Woo! Some have called her the female Jim Cantore, but I say no. I say no.
She doesn't wear her shirts as tight.
I have too much hair for that. True.
She's currently a co-host on AMHQ in the morning. Stephanie Abrams has covered every type of weather from the Weather Channel since 2003. And in the field, she's covered hurricanes, tornadoes, heat waves, flooding, snow, and fires. Previously, Stephanie was a morning meteorologist at Tallahassee, Florida, or Tallahassee Lassie. She graduated with a bachelor's degree in meteorology from Florida State University and also earned a bachelor's degree in geography from the University of Florida. And don't forget, in 2014, she also had a cameo appearance in Sharknado 2, the second one.
Nice.
Welcome, Stephanie.
That's really what I'm best known for.
Yeah.
not the female Jim Cantore, huh?
No. But thank you for having me. I'm excited to chat with you guys tonight.
We're so happy to have you.
Yeah. So tell us how you got involved with Sharknado, first of all. Let's talk about that. How
did you know that?
It was so long ago, but I remember saying, I want to do this. We need to be involved. There's weather. And I can't remember exactly how it got all hooked up, but I do remember once it did, I got to work with them, with the people involved in Sharknado, and I got to work with them on what we were going to do and the graphics. And I can't remember now who made the graphics at the Weather Channel. Oh, I wish I did, so I give them a shout out. But someone helped me make the graphics, and then we were talking about like my script. It was really pretty much ad-libby. And I was like, well, I could do, you know, you have like 2-inch an hour rainfall rates. Maybe I say like 2-inch of shark rainfall rate type of a thing. And so we just tried out a couple little, you know, cute things that you would do on the weather and just put shark in there. And it came out a lot of fun.
Oh, that's so awesome. Did you shoot it here in Atlanta or did
you? It was when I was in New York. And so we shot it in our New York studio. So I don't know if everyone knows, for a little bit, I've been at the Weather Channel now, what, like 17 and a half years or something. And some of those years were up in New York because we had a show with Al Roker and we had Wake Up with Al. And so he would do the show with me at 30 Rock in our Weather Channel little studio, our nook. And then he would go over and do the Today Show. And so that's actually where we shot it, was in that. Well, they just came in and, you know, I don't remember if we rolled on it or they did, but it was really fun and cool to kind of work with them on it.
Oh my God, that's so awesome. And so I have one more quick question, Stephanie. Yeah. Are you the youngest meteorologist, on-camera meteorologist at the Weather Channel?
Right now?
No. When you first started. When you came out.
Oh, I was like, I'm an old lady now. Come on. I mean, I started when I was 24. So you know what? I'll have to ask. I was definitely young.
I feel like you are. I feel like you were the youngest they've had to start on camera. Well, I will double check that.
We'll have to look into that. Yeah.
So if you were 24 and now you're 25, how have things changed at the Weather Channel for you and for everybody, even the ladies, everybody?
I mean, it's been quite a ride, you know, and I know Jen and Dina can also talk to this a little bit, but what is so weird, it's been nearly 20 years, right? And just think about technology over 20 years, how we didn't have social media. I remember one time, you know, Bettis and I worked together for a really long time, Mike Bettis, and what we had before in commercial breaks, they set up a laptop so people could, like, we would live stream our laptops. When I first started at the Weather Channel, believe it or not, I was doing broadband. And this was, I mean, I don't even know if people still use that word, but what we would do is, that's where I got my start, was on doing broadband and then filling in on the network. And so I would stand there and do each city. If you would watch it on weather.com on the internet, I would give your city forecast, and I would just do it for hours for all these different cities. And so that's how I started. And just the evolution, you know, just the other day, someone was asking me about how things have changed in weather. And I said, well, we no longer, again, have math walls as meteorologists in school and everything. You printed, used to print out the maps and have them all lined up on the right
charts. Yes.
All that stuff. And I said, something else we used to do is all the warnings, the Weather Channel would have a printer that would just print out every warning. And we had a table off to the side and we would organize and line up all the warnings so we could see them. Now, of course, I just pick up my phone and click on the warning and get it. But little things like that have been, you know, fun and interesting. And then, of course, with IMR and the big studio and that sort of stuff, the technology has just been really fun to work with.
It is insane because I remember when Twitter started, I was like, I'm not getting on there. I don't want to get on Twitter. And then I realized, man, I'm missing a ton. Like people are posting weather videos immediately. And you know, you really have to get into it. Now it's such a place you go to say, oh my God, is it snowing in Arkansas right now? Or is it snowing in Atlanta? And you could find out.
You can get the verification right there that quick.
That's crazy.
Stephanie, I got a question for you. So do you still get a chance to get out in the field, like in the weather? So what's the best thing? Like what, if you could pick anything to go see or cover, report on, what would it be?
So I've done it all, right? From literally fires to floods to hurricanes and tornadoes. And, I'll say that tornadoes are my least favorite because long story short, this was way back in the day, we were covering a tornado back when, something else has changed. We used to use these huge satellite trucks and now everything's in a backpack on a computer, you know, live streaming. But we were in Missouri. We were just outside Kansas City and they'd just been hit by tornadoes. And I remember sitting in the truck with my producer, I'm looking at the radar and, you know, all of a sudden the radar was purple. It wasn't red, purple on the radar. And I looked at my producer, I said, this is not good. And I went outside to do a live shot. And then, you know, it's getting pitch black. The sirens start going off. And I was like, this is it. We got to go. This is not safe. It starts pouring. And they were freelancers. And so this is their livelihood. So they're trying to get all their gear in the car. And like, we got to go. I mean, it was really a stressful situation. So tornadoes are my least favorite because they're so unpredictable about exactly where they're going to.
Stephanie, that actually sounds awesome. Like that sounds like maybe the best day ever.
No, it was not because everything was like flattened basically around us from the previous storms, and so I had to get everyone back to the hotel, and it's my response. I'm the meteorologist, I know what's happening, and so I'm like, we have to go now, drop, we're, you know. So that was probably the most stressful it's ever been. With hurricanes, you can prepare, you know, and then of course snowstorms are just fun because most people stay home, right? Mm-hmm. And you can just really enjoy the snow. Long story short.
Oh my gosh, Stephanie. Well, I feel like with Greg, I don't know. I might be like thinking Greg's way, but also with you, Stephanie, you're responsible for them. So it's just like, and now they have, I think, two required meteorologists in the field at the same time. So if you're on camera, there's someone else also monitoring the weather.
That makes sense.
That can help out.
You know, that situation. Go ahead, Phil.
Well, I was going to ask this since we're on this topic of being in the field. You know, one of the questions I've always had and I've heard people ask about is, you know, because what's sexy right now on TV is always extreme, is always everything. And especially when it comes to weather, it's being in the extreme and catching that on video and everything else. And so that's just kind of the nature of and the trend of TV. But for weather, who makes the decisions to go, you know what, we're in a tropical storm, I am going to be out here, winds are picking up, shit's flying around all over the place, who's making that decision to go, you know what, I'm going to be out here, and know what, I don't think I should be out here? And then number two, and I'm sure you've heard this a ton, Stephanie, but what do you feel is the impression of the average person when we're telling people, evacuate, get indoors, all this kind of stuff, and yet we're out there leaning into the wind and reporting on the weather. So kind of two questions, kind of what's involved in that decision-making process if you're out or in or what you're doing? And then number two, I guess, How do you respond to the people that are going, you know, should you be doing that when I'm?
Yeah. Well, the first, I mean, how I usually respond to the people who are like, why are you out there? The first thing is we're meteorologists, and I have 20 years, essentially. My first hurricane season was 04 in the field. So I have almost, you know, 15, 20 years of being in the field. You know, for instance, there was one during Hurricane Ike, and I knew that the winds were going to shift around, which meant the waves were going to get high over the wall, and then they were going to shift and be on the, you know, so we, as a meteorologist, we have that knowledge and know how to be prepared for that and shift when things are changing in the field. And we are prepared and advanced for that. When it comes to the field, they are very, very safe. Also in Ike, I remember they called and said, listen, ask your entire crew. If someone doesn't want to be there, they can leave. There's no questions asked. Safety first. During Michael, I was down in Port St. Joe, because that's the only place I thought I could find a safe house. And then I didn't feel safe there. And I called and they said, leave right now. There's no hesitation at work with, if you don't feel safe, leave. And they're also very particular. There was one hurricane years ago where I said, I'm staying here. And they were like, no, it's not safe. You're not high enough. You are not staying there. You will not be out, you know? So it's safety first at the Weather Channel. And just this past year with Laura, we were in Lake Charles, and we were in a massive building, and I had my crew. Let me tell you how protected I had them. And this comes with, of course, being a meteorologist and the experience. My photog, and I'm not exaggerating, there's a picture of it somewhere. I wish I could show you guys. He was sitting in a chair, no rain gear. His jacket was off. I believe his jacket was off in this picture. He's sitting in a chair with no jacket, just behind the camera, chilling, while I was just steps away from him out in the elements. You know, getting hammered, because I knew how to protect him. I knew which way the winds were going to be coming from. So I knew how to barricade him in this little area so that he would be fine and that we could obviously come in, and which we ended up doing when things got too bad.
Did he ever thank you?
As he was having
I don't
a drink.
Think so, because yeah, we were on air for, I mean, I'm probably like 8-9 hours straight or something, you know. I had schlepping through the casino. Okay, we're gonna do live shots and here it's safe, and then the other side. So we were pretty worn out.
Okay, so pick one event. One event. Just what is the highlight, like, of the career? One major weather event.
So I don't know if I want to call it a highlight necessarily, but I would say the most memorable event was Katrina.
Yeah.
For me. Because, you know, they're putting out these warnings of the surge. It's going to be 20, 30 feet. And you're kind of like, okay, that's like a three-story, but what? This is insane. And I was all the way in the Florida Panhandle. And again, I'll try to make this long story short. I was in the Panhandle. And so I was up from like 7 a.m. I think my last live shot was 11:30. Now, again, this is 20 years ago, so don't quote me on that. But it was something like we started early in the morning, and then all the live shots went down because the satellite dishes couldn't stay up back. And then so we had to we stayed up. And then they called and there was no cell service. And they said, you guys have to go find Cantori, essentially, because they couldn't get a hold of them and this whole thing. So we went to the airport, got another car. We loaded up with gas and food. We drive there. I mean, and Cantori and I talk about it still to this day, it looked like a movie set. The what the surge did, the fact that it pushed this mammoth casino, you would see where the air conditioning was, and then the casino was on land, you know, however far away. It looked like a movie set is the only way to describe it, because you just can't even, there aren't words, no one would believe it unless they saw it with their own eyes. So I would say Katrina was the most shocking and memorable.
Wow.
Yeah.
So where do you go from here then? It's over, isn't it? You're done. The career. It's right.
Drop the mic.
I just feel you know, everyone always says, oh, what would you be doing? And anyone that's listening, if you have an answer to that, you need to go do that. Whatever it is.
That's a good point.
They say, you know, oh, well, I'm going to do this, or I should do, you need to go do it right now. And so I've been so lucky that I've been able to live this dream job and dream career for all these years. I mean, I just feel so thankful for that. Other things that I really am interested in is I love space. I would love to go to outer space someday.
Oh, that'd be awesome.
Yes.
Cool. Yeah, I ask you, what's on your weather bucket list? So do you have a
bucket list? I mean, another thing, I covered fire. I think the only thing I haven't experienced is an earthquake. And for a while I wanted to be a volcanologist. I went through all the sciences and I landed on weather because I feel like it covered all of them. That's how I ended up in weather. I took an oceanography class. I thought I was going to be a volcanologist for a while. I thought I was going to be a marine biologist for a while. And weather kind of tapped into a little bit of all that and the physics and the chemistry. And that's why I fell in love with it. But fires were something that was also strange to cover, because I remember one house would be burned down and the next house next to it would be totally fine. And I think that having all these experiences over all these years just makes me a better meteorologist, and I can understand like what the people are going through and how to articulate and do all that sort of stuff. But you know, I'm thinking, I think I've covered every type of weather.
And well, hey, Steph, I really do think you're great at this, because you're the one person I know that still has a real love and passion for what she does. She just doesn't want to phone it in. She wants to do a great job. And I think that's what helps you keep going.
All right. We'll get you guys a room later. But hey, talking about
shut up, Bill.
Talking about careers. Last question before we go to break. What's the state law down in Florida? Can you get a degree at Florida and Florida State?
I know this is a big question. So here's the thing. I went to Florida, and like I said, I took all those math and sciences, and I fell into meteorology class and loved it. They didn't have a bachelor's there, but I loved being at Florida. You have to understand, I bleed orange and blue. When my first year there was 96. Now everyone knows how old I am, but that's fine. Doesn't matter. I'm kidding. And we won our first national title in football. And then my senior year, we went for our first national title in basketball, and we lost to Michigan State. And so I had these bookends. I was having this like incredible sports, you know, time as well when I was there, and I didn't want to leave. And so that's why I stayed at Florida, and then everything transferred to Florida State. But I still bleed orange and blue. I can't help it.
Awesome. Thank you. Ada Monzon is here with us for tonight. Chief meteorologist from WIPR-TV in Puerto Rico. She's the first female meteorologist in Puerto Rico and an expert in hurricanes and tropical weather. She's an American Meteorological Society Fellow awardee and Broadcaster of the Year. They just keep piling the awards on you. Ada is also the founder of the Eco Exploratorio. Is that right? Did I say that right? Exploratorio?
Yes, you did right.
Okay, good. All right. Puerto Rico Science Museum, and her messaging before, during, and after Hurricane Maria reached over 31 million viewers. That is awesome. She finished her bachelor's degree in mathematics from the University of Puerto Rico, Rio Piedras. Mm-hmm. Oh, yes. I'm rocking it tonight.
Okay. That's good.
And her master's degree in meteorology from Florida State University. Welcome, Ada. Glad you're here.
Welcome.
I'm so happy. Thank you so much. You're such a great crowd. I am happy to be
We're excited to have you guys.
Thank you so much.
So what's it like to be the first female meteorologist in Puerto Rico? I mean, is it something, do you like, I'm the first, or is it like, oh, go on, or is it like a dream come true? Tell me, like, what's it like?
Well, even since I was a kid, I knew that I loved weather. I grew up with my mother, my grandmother, and my mother, and they were all teachers. And my aunt, she was the science teacher, and she had this beautiful Time Life collection of books. And she had especially the weather book, and I knew it by heart. I knew my clouds, I knew my instruments. So I always knew that I wanted to be a meteorologist. My mother was not so convinced, because she said, well, but I mean, there are no other women around, so there was no role model for me to follow. So I used to go to the National Weather Service office, and there was Dr. Jose Colon, who was the MIC of the Weather Service office. And he always was so supportive. And he said, you continue on and you go to university. You have to go to and get a master's degree, and then you come back to Puerto Rico. So exactly, that's what I did. I got into FSU, and I got a NASA fellowship. That was really helpful, because if you know I didn't have that, I wasn't going to be able to get my degree. And so that really, when I came back, yes, I was the first, but it actually has never ever been into my system like I'm the first. Is that, you know, I hope that with my presence, not only as at the Weather Service office, because that's where I started working for, and through my university years and through the broadcast period that I'm still in. I hope that I'm inspiring more women into the field. And this is something very interesting. We have now a meteorology program at the University of Puerto Rico in Mayagüez, which we started about 10 years ago. And most of the graduates from the program are women. And so we have PhDs, master's degrees, and you know, I am so proud of them. And I always support them. I'm glad they're godmother, more godmother or mother, but it is a very beautiful feeling to know that we are leaving the meteorology career in very good hands, you know, for the future.
Now, with 31 million viewers that one time, did you know you have your biggest fan on air tonight with us? Morgan is on with us.
Oh, Morgan.
Aww. Well, I'd like to add that I'm glad that I live in an era where I can have role models. So thank you for being one of them. I can't say you're the one that made me change, because, you know, I didn't know of you when I was younger, but I do have a similar story with the book. My grandma was a librarian. She had this like tornado book, and that was very interesting to me when I was probably 7 years old. And I think that's what sparked my interest in weather. So yeah, it's very similar. And I'm also amazed that you've been working in meteorology for 30 years like that. You don't look it. So that was one of like the, I remember at AMS, I was like, there's no way.
I do have a question. I'm sorry. Go ahead. What were you talking about? Your daughters?
No. That I also have three beautiful daughters. None of them wants to be in science. They're all in finance. So, but still, you know, they but the thing is that they got this discipline, the scientific discipline. They do have it because they had to do science fairs with me like for 6 years. Yeah, but it's very interesting. You know, time flies, and I still feel like, you know, this is not over. Actually, after Hurricane Maria, there's so much to do that it's like I am starting once again into a new path.
So you were talking about now the university and the number of women graduating with meteorological degrees. How was it 30 years ago in Puerto Rico? What was the climate like for a woman to be in a STEM program like that and to be in science? What's changed over those 30 years?
You know, there was one person at the National Weather Service Forecast Office where, when I used to go volunteer, and he told me once that I would never be a meteorologist because the career was very tough, and that working shifts was going to be very hard on me and my family. So that really made me very mad. And later on, when I came back, he was not there at the office at that time. Even when I was at FSU, most the students in the classroom, they were all males. Very few women in the meteorology program, especially in the graduate program. And I was with the only professor, the only woman professor at FSU, which was Dr. Sharon Nicholson, and she still is. And so I learned to survive in an environment where there were all men, very few women, but I realized very early on that you cannot pay attention to comments and things because you're here you have a mission. And your mission you have to accomplish, and you have to keep focused on the things that you want to do and achieve in your life. So those are like noise. Those are like noise around you, but you don't pay attention. And sometimes it hurts, but you know, everything hurts, even in broadcast community, when you do something that people don't like or the forecast was not good. You learn to go through all of these periods, and you know, I've learned that it doesn't matter. You have to do what you need to do, and you have to feel happy about what you do.
Now, I agree, definitely, because people are going to put you down no matter what, and it makes me wonder, like, how are people in Puerto Rico, as viewers, are they as rude as they are here?
Well, you know, it's a mix. It's a mix. It's like everywhere else. I mean, I don't think there's any difference. When we had Hurricane Maria threatened, and Hurricane Irma before Maria, I had a lot of, I don't know how to say this in English, but I think they're called memes.
Yeah,
that's when people. Yeah. Right. So people made a lot of fun about me. I laughed a lot. You know, they were like, is Adam Monzon doing a Facebook Live? Like they were all scared or, you know, things like that. And people, it got to a point that I started blocking people because I didn't want to continue to receive all these messages because people didn't want to believe that we were threatened by a Category 5 hurricane, not once, twice in 2 weeks. So it was very hard for all of us to handle the threat. And then we were all scared. I was scared, but I saw that in social media, that was my only chance to do whatever I want with the tools that I had around me to get the message out. It was the sense of urgency that really moved me. And you know, I use the social media as my main platform. You know, I work for TV, I work for radio, and that was very important. But your time frame in those platforms is very limited. So Facebook was the way for me to bring the message and to alert people of what was going to happen every 3 hours. Every time we had a bulletin, I was on. And I translated the information that we were getting in the bulletin into something that anyone can use, because it's very hard to get a bulletin of 175 miles per hour winds. And all of a sudden, how are you going to interpret that? So it took a lot of me, but I knew that life had prepared me somehow for that moment. And I changed from being a meteorologist into a friend. And somehow that transition, I didn't know it was happening, but the situation brought me into that point. You know, when that Wednesday morning when we had Hurricane Maria entering Puerto Rico, it was 6 in the morning. I mean, we were at the TV station. Everything was like all these noises, like everything was falling into the roof of the building. And I thought I was going to die because we had a huge tower, like more than 100 feet tower. And everything from the tower was falling over the roof where we were doing the transmission. And I started crying and praying. Can you imagine yourself praying in front of a Facebook Live or on TV and radio? You know, I just became me. You know, I just became one of us. And it's very hard to even remember all the emotional things that happened. But today I was at the IT and we were talking about energy, how energy destroyed Puerto Rico. And something that I realized even today, that we have to change the message. We have to change everything we have said for the last 15, 20, or 30 years to prepare people. We need to change the message because extreme events are going to be more frequent, and it's going to happen to all of us. All of us are going to be part, we're all going to be victims of climate change. And I'm a victim of climate change now. And I didn't realize that for some reason, because we're still working with the aftermath. And it's very difficult to be a victim and try to prepare and educate and do all these things at the same time. A lot of emotional component and behavioral component is coming into place, and it's not getting easier every day. It's not.
What,
Oh, sorry. Now in Puerto Rico? It's been like 18 months. I mean, what's it like there?
We're back. I mean, the tourism is back. It's a lot of innovation. I think that we have a huge opportunity now after Hurricane Maria to do better. We cannot keep doing things like we did before. That's why we have to not think up outside of the box. We have to break the box and start over. And I think that we're in a good path. It's still that it's a process and it takes time. And, you know, as long as we walk on the same way, although we can have disagreements on how to do things, as long as we have the same purpose and the same goals, we're gonna be fine. It's better, but still we have some areas in Puerto Rico that are they have no roofs in some of the houses. You know, the strong and resilient houses, they fared well. They had water damage or maybe some minor damage. But the ones that were not resilient, the ones that are not built by under the code or they're not in the safe areas, unfortunately, they had major damage. And with, you know, the recovery is probably not as fast as we want because the funding to make the recovery faster is not coming fast enough. So everything is being delayed. Even something that I heard today, you know, let me pull out these numbers. Energy was the big issue. We needed 62,000 poles, electric poles.
Wow.
2 million feet, a foot of cable for all the lines, for the transmission lines, for all that. So when they try to call, you know, from the government, they try to call and get these things, there was no material. Resources are finite for catastrophic events. Even people from FEMA that I know that they were working to get some of the supplies, when you were asking in terms of thousands what you needed, there were no resources even in the United States. So that's something that we have to think about. We have to think about extreme events, how to prepare, and how to start working in either piling up for these things in some centers or having the distribution also. There are many issues that we as meteorologists, of course, we educate. We are the link between the community and the science. But at the same time, we are part of the policy, of the public policy that is around us. And we need to bring that science so that the politicians and the government take the best decision and make the best decisions for preparing to these catastrophic events. So there's a lot to learn, especially in terms of health. I never thought that we were going to have so many deaths. 2,975 deaths. Wow.
That's
something that is unbelievable. Yeah. That's insane. So and we think about Katrina, and this was even worse than Katrina. So I don't know the answer. We're still looking for the right way to do things, but we are back. And business is back for many people, but there are many issues. You have to think about energy, communications, social services, education, infrastructure, health, you know, so many details that we have to think about and be prepared for.
Ada, I had one more question. You were talking about preparation because I was wondering, you know, now what would you do different? You kind of answered a lot of that. A lot of that's preparation. But I was reading that you were starting or trying to start a weather network with Earth Networks, mm-hmm. and it was something like 12 stations. So how does that work?
Well, we have now 17 weather stations, 12 of them are already online, 5 will be pretty soon because we coordinate that with the Puerto Rico Department of Education. So what we're trying to do, so schools are communities, right? At the same time, they're school communities. And that's where we gather our future generation and the teachers. And we're trying to build resiliency through innovation in STEM education. And that's a project that we have taken for the last 18 months that actually we're finishing by the end of this month. And it's been very interesting because now we're providing, you know, we lost all the weather infrastructure, Dina. We lost it. We lost the Doppler radar. I show that at the AMS. Even a month after the hurricane destroyed the Doppler radar, I went out there with the engineering, some of the engineers of the University of Puerto Rico in Mayagüez, and we found the radar. It was debris, what we found. We kept the feed horn. The feed horn, we have it at the museum, let me tell you. That we found the feed horn, but nothing else. And even the tower was kind of tilted and turned. So we know that the huge tornado, that the debris field was huge. And the last reading from the radar at 4,000 feet was 223 miles per hour.
Wow.
And that was when the eye was about to make landfall, because there was a double eye configuration at the time it made landfall, but the inner eye was collapsing while the outer eye was becoming more intense. And that's exactly when the outer eye hit the radar, you know, those winds hit the radar, that's when we lost it. So we lost everything. And we started with the weather network, with Earth Network, to start a new weather stations, especially for schools to get students inspired on this.
It was in the middle of, if I'm not mistaken, going through an eyewall replacement cycle, right, as it was coming to Puerto Rico. Is that right?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And that's why it went from 175 miles per hour, then it went to 155 miles per hour when it made landfall. But, you know, this is the point. Puerto Rico is 75% mountains, okay? So, yes, it might have been 155 miles per hour at landfall at sea level, but as soon as it hit the mountains, you know, like what happened with the radar, we had more than 200 miles per hour. So nobody wants to believe that this was a Cat 4. So I say, don't worry, it was a Cat 4.9.
Yeah, 2 miles per hour does make no difference.
Thank you for tuning in to the Stormfront Freaks podcast. You can watch our bi-weekly show live on youtube.com/stormfrontfreaks and download the audio version on your favorite podcast player. For links to our Patreon team of exclusive benefits, show notes, past shows, new videos, merchandise, and more, visit our website at stormfrontfreaks.com. While you're there, check out our interactive chaser radar from our friends at zoomradar.com. If you'd like to contact us with questions or make comments about the show, shoot us an email to questions@stormfrontfreaks.com or follow us on Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, or TikTok. Search for Stormfront Freaks. We'd love to hear from you. Join us next time and tell a friend about the Stormfront Freaks podcast.